Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
You're listening to Text Message with me, Nate Langson.
And me, Ian Morris.
I've got a lovely cup of tea to my west and to my east. A mini disc player that I've been using for archival purposes. Fascinating time to be alive. Ian, do you have anything comparable to discuss?
I've got a can of lemonade.
What flavour? Mr. Blobby
lemonade.
Right, okay.
No, it's just lemonade, mate. It's just Schweppes lemonade.
Well, it says Kate came home today with two packets of chocolate-rich tea biscuits, which she's been waiting to find again for years, literally years. And she came back, and I thought, well, if the world is giving us chocolate-rich tea biscuits, maybe it's only a short step to Mr. Blobby Pink Lemonade. Frankly, the best of the lemonades.
Yeah.
You can't go wrong putting Mr. Blobby on something.
I think you absolutely can.
Let's move on. We're not going to talk about the online safety law, because what's the point? We've discussed it to death. It's law now. Google it if you wish. We'll revisit it, I imagine, at such a point that it's used to do anything remotely helpful. Although if you are keen to hear me talk about something to do with it, I did have Nick Clegg on my Bloomberg
show. You did mention it, and you did have him on.
IRL. So we talked about whether it was useful to threaten jailing Mark Zuckerberg, things like that. So that's there, link in the show notes, of course. Instead, let's have some fun. And by coincidence, we're also going to talk a bit about AI, because Rishi Sunak says AI could help make it easier to build chemical and biological weapons, according to the BBC, or in a worst case scenario, society could lose all control over AI, preventing it from being switched off.
It's all nonsense, though, isn't it, Nate?
Lasai springs instantly to mind. Lasai. Yeah. Why is he talking about this? Good question, myself. Well, the UK is hosting its first AI safety summit next week at Bletchley Park. The goal is to bring together some world leaders, some tech giants, experts, some academics, some journalists, to discuss how to create the safest artificial intelligence possible, which is, let's be fair, that is a worthwhile goal, but it's beginning to look a bit like the birthday party of an unpopular kid in school who sends invites to everyone, bought a crap load of cake and balloons, and then sat to wait if any of the cool kids, or indeed anyone, shows up. And right now, expectations are, I would say, let's call them tepid. We could also call them low. The government hasn't published a list of who's coming. We do know that of the G7 countries, only Italy's leader said he'd come. US Vice President Kamala Harris is attending. Nick Clegg and DeepMind's Demis Hassabis also apparently coming, although the latter, they do actually live here, so perhaps that's not that surprising.
Okay, so I have two questions.
Okay.
The first question, no, it's not really a question, actually. It's a statement. I once fell asleep on a train and woke up in Bletchley Park.
Nice.
It was after a CNET drink, I think, and I was listening to one of the songs that Rory had fallen in love with.
Was it
Cooking by the
Lips
Book
to the Floor?
No, it wasn't. It was way past then. It was Cooking by the Book, which is a Lazy Town and who's it a mashup with? Master Grrr or something. Anyway, that aside, Nate, what exactly is the point of this?
Absolutely bog all, mate.
Well, all right. But that aside, my experience ending up in Bletchley when I meant to be in Watford aside, what's the point of this? What do they want to achieve?
Yeah.
Tell me now.
Well, the point of it, I think, is I think they want to establish the UK as some kind of standards bearer for safe AI. In my head, and this isn't anything that's been officially put on the table, but in my head, I kind of feel like Rishi Sunak wants the UK to be something of a Switzerland, some kind of a neutral entity, because basically all the big AI companies are either American or Chinese. That is a reality that we live in. And the UK will be a large beneficiary of whatever happens to AI, or could also be in the firing line for harms. So, but we don't really make a lot of it, if we're being honest, in terms of the big companies. It doesn't really come from us. So the role here, but we also have a hell of a lot of institutional knowledge, a lot of academics, a lot of scientific grounding. We have created significant AI companies, DeepMind being one notable example of that, but there are others that are just not quite as big or successful. But if you say that we have the knowledge, but we don't necessarily have the commercial skin in the game as some of the other players do, then it could put you in a good position to be something of a mediator or standards setter and help convene the world in a way that perhaps isn't as easy for the US or China or anywhere else to do.
The way I heard it framed was the UK is big enough to be a significant import to the industry, so you know they want to keep us on side, but we're also apparently, and I dispute this slightly, small enough to move quickly, and that therefore us setting regulatory standards is useful for the rest of the world because we can do it quicker than anywhere else. I will just point out that the online harms/safety bill has been going on for what, 4 years now, so that sort of poo-poos
let's not forget that AI doesn't respect geographical borders, tensions, or anything like that, and so this is not going to result in regulation. Like, that's not what this is. It might involve coming up with ideas for what a regulation could be or what it could look like, but it's not going to be I just don't believe that's the intention here. I mean, how could it? It's not. I think that what we are going to end up getting from this is something very similar to what's already happened in the US, where President Biden convened, I think, 7 leaders. I know Clegg was there. I think Sam Altman was there, some others, and essentially got them to sign a pledge, like an agreement about how AI should be developed, like principles that were agreed to. And I think maybe that something similar to that will come out of this. I think he wants to create some sort of a think tank or an institute or something that can review the large language models and some of the underlying frameworks to the most advanced AI so that they can be examined by lots of people and independently conclude and derive some independent conclusions about, you know, maybe are these safe? Is this the right way forward? Are the safeguards in place? Have we caveated whatever needs caveating? And then maybe from that you get good ideas for regulation or changes that other jurisdictions and other countries and businesses can adopt. That's a potential. What I actually think could end up happening is that it becomes a lot of waffle about good intentions, and wouldn't it be excellent if AI didn't destroy jobs and didn't make it easier to create chemical weapons, whereas the reality of the situation is that it is going to destroy jobs and it will create them, and you can already use technology to tell you how to make chemical weapons. The nuance in all of this is what is important, and it's not, I don't think, going to be the nuances that get discussed, and that's problematic.
I also heard someone say that it wasn't being viewed as a particularly important conference, and it was very much a sort of a buzzwordy thing, which makes sense. And I mean, it always annoys me, and I'm sure it annoys you too, because it's very much your area of expertise at the moment. You know, there's AI doing a huge amount of different things in a variety of fields, and some of it very useful. Some of it keeping us safe, some of it obviously infringing on our rights, but you know, it's, the whole thing is a bit complicated, and you know, there is so much nuance to it. And I had LBC on in the kitchen when I was making the kids lunch earlier, and I heard them say, oh, we want to hear about, you know, what you think to AI, and I was like, why are you asking them, the people? I mean, you know, obviously it matters what people think, but do the people really have a grasp of it? Do they understand what's going on with AI? Do they even really understand it apart from, you know, the generative AI aspect of it that I would argue is, you know, only touching AI anyway, really?
Yeah, I mean, the generative stuff has been in development for a little while, but ChatGPT is not even a year old at this point. Generative AI...
That's mind-blowing, isn't it, really?
Yeah. Generative AI has been ticking around in the background for, let's say, in decent form since about 2018, 2019 maybe. Deep learning since a little past 2010. and then AI and machine learning and computer vision back to the 50s. This has all been around for a while, but when you see what's possible with generative AI, you see the potential, very realistic potential for gains and harms and losses, and that's why everyone got very, very excited about it. But the nuances will be the most interesting things.
And I mean, did you say whether or not there was any, you know, resemblance about this to the pledge that Joe Biden signed?
No, because we don't really know yet exactly what's going to come out of this. The government's actually been a little bit opaque about what's going on the inside, which, to be fair, might be a metaphor for AI itself. We don't really know how it works. We just know that it does. So maybe there's a little bit of irony there. I strongly doubt it, but I'm sure we'll revisit this in a week's time when we know what comes out of it. The thing is, and I was saying this to somebody earlier today, actually, it's hard to see how this could make anything worse. If you're convening a lot of people and having a conversation, then you're not necessarily making the situation worse. You're not making people less informed. Even if you're speaking in an echo chamber, it is an echo chamber of things that you may already have heard. And so it's hard to think that that's going to be worse. It's whether it makes it useful and who is attending. I'm going to be very interested to see how much time and attention is given to the big tech companies versus the independent academics. Because the problem we had with social media is that it was largely unchecked in terms of its accelerated growth. And we ended up in a situation where a very, very, very small group of companies, mostly American and a little bit Chinese, have basically had their hands around the world's economic and political developments over the last 20 years. And I think that there's quite a decent bit of appetite to avoid that happening again. And yet when you look at who the biggest players in AI are, they are largely the ones who derive the money to do what they're doing now from the aforementioned unchecked growth, thanks to investments in cloud computing and social media and advertising and so forth. So I think that is good reason to have these things. We'll see what benefit comes out of it, or at least we'll judge what we think is the benefit coming out of it in a week's time. But it's happening. So it's something to be aware of. You're going to read a lot about it. I have to say, I read one of the documents that the government had published. It's like a white paper, but it was sort of, I think they wrote it as to serve as something of a template for discussions at the event, which starts on the 1st of November. And it's about 30 pages long. I read the whole thing. And as a primer for the front-running benefits, concerns, developments, and technological standings of current AI, it's pretty decent. It's a good comprehensive overview of where we are. I'll include a link to it in the show notes. You can access it for free. It's written in relatively accessible language, and I would say that it is a good summary. It is fair, and I think whoever put that together did a good job of that. So that's good. And if that does form the base of a conversation, then great. But it is tilted in favor of doom rather than benefits.
I'm just not getting that sense with AI. I mean, look, I think there's so much potential for it, and realistically, humans aren't going to just cede power to AI without some thought first. I mean, it's easy to go down this kind of, it'll take away all our jobs. I mean, I don't really mind if it takes away the job I have of sometimes having to fill in a spreadsheet. You know, like, I'd be thrilled if AI read my email and put everything in a spreadsheet for me. That would be absolutely top banana.
But, there are several studies that show that something like 50% of all the jobs that we now have today didn't exist 50 years ago.
Mm. Computers weren't a thing.
That is a thing. And that's worth bearing in mind.
Yeah, it is. I mean, of course, things will change. It's inevitable, but we, just have to be, aware of it. I'm all for using AI in my job to make things less tedious, which is really what AI could be quite good for. you know, and it's also extremely good for managing large data sets that I physically could not look through. You know, if I want to know something that happened, look up a record of something, you know, AI is going to be a lot better at that. Anyway,
but that's because you're illiterate.
Illiterate? What, can't read? Yeah. Yes. Well, I mean, I'm still going to be able to read. I suppose it could read it to me.
Charlotte says, I also think that working from home, we were more productive, and now we're back in the office, we're expected to maintain the same level, and that's not sustainable. AI helps us to be more productive.
It does. I have to travel for an hour and a half to get to the office, and it seems like a waste of time.
Do you know what? I found, not to be a contrarian here, but I found the exact opposite to be true now. And before the pandemic, I used to do maybe a day a week from home, and on that day, I'd get so much more done because I could focus. Whereas today, I am glad that I'm spending 4 days in the office because I cannot get anything done at home anymore.
Really? Is it because of two dogs?
It's not just the dogs. It's just everything. It's procrastination. It's there not really being a big difference between where I'm sitting or what I'm doing for work and home. The distractions are there, you know. So
yeah, I get that. But yeah, well, it's not really related to this conversation. But I understand what you're saying.
Well, like a fully functioning train, let's move forwards.
Years of Doctor Who will finally stream all in one place in the UK, Nate. I know you're a massive Who fan. And Doctor Who's getting a new home. Well, sort of. For the first time in the entire history of the show will be available on iPlayer. Of course, there are gaps.
All 800 odd episodes?
Yes. Well, no. Because there are some gaps early on. I mean, famously, a lot of the broadcasts that originally went out were not retained. You know, there were various things. Some of it was put on magnetic tape that was too expensive. I mean, there is a lot of different opinions about why it happened. Some of it might have been erased accidentally. Some of it might have been reused because the tape stock was so expensive. And back then, we had a very different opinion of how media would be. People thought that things would be on once and that was it. You know, it was a sort of play mentality, right? You know, you don't have a play and record it and then show the play to all these subsequent audiences on a TV. You put a new performance on. I mean, you know, I'm not saying that's how they were thinking about it because it's a different medium. Anyway, I noticed Nate's been going through this and changing season to series. Anyway, it will finally offer viewers one place to go for Doctor Who. Now, you might ask me why this hasn't already happened.
Ian?
Yeah.
Why hasn't this already happened?
Well, that's a good question, Nate. It's complicated because the rights for Doctor Who were obviously sort of always sat with the BBC, but then they had that joint venture, didn't they, with ITV BritBox. And ITV has subsequently bought all of BritBox, I think. So it's now an ITV thing. I don't think the BBC's content may not be there anymore. At least a lot of it isn't. But that did give them the opportunity, along with the new Disney deal, which I'll come to in a bit, to sort of put it all in one place. So now all of the various spin-offs, including Torchwood and Sarah Jane Adventures, and even behind the scenes Doctor Who Confidential, which has ended but was great, will be available to rewatch. And there's loads of other material they're putting online to support it, like photos and rare audio. There's a load of audio left over from the video that's missing. So you'll be able to maybe listen to some episodes. They've done things in the past where they've animated gaps. So if there's a bit of video they don't have, they've like animated their way through it, just so people can see the whole story. Anyway, with that all set up, Doctor Who's about to start an entirely new adventure. The BBC's done this deal with Disney, which will be the home of the show outside of the UK and Ireland. New episodes will debut on Disney Plus around the same time as they do on iPlayer, I believe, for a global audience, which is also a first, kind of. That deal will start with the next series when the 15th Doctor starts his tenure. That people who've watched sex education will know the name of the man. I've forgotten it and I should have written it down and I haven't. He's brilliant anyway. And he's taking over next year. So the show's 60 years old in November and there'll be a few new episodes with David Tennant returning. It'll be on telly if you own such a device. And from the 23rd online, presumably that's the same time as the air date. Any questions about this?
I wonder what precedent this sets for other historic shows that have not necessarily been available on
Coronation Street. You're talking about Coronation Street, aren't you?
I'm thinking about things like that. Ones where you can't
that
get...
That is on ITVX, though, isn't it? Or at least what bits of it are.
Okay, well, what I mean is that there are a lot of shows. Doctor Who is actually a bad example of this. Something like Dragon's Den is a good example, or The Apprentice, or things that have been on for many years, if not a few decades, where you cannot, like, there is no destination anywhere legally that you can go and stream all back episodes of. And I don't care about reasons to do with rights. It's just
That was what I was going to say. BBC just doesn't own Dragon's Den. That's the big problem there.
We know the rights are the issue, but I feel like if you can sort something out to the point that you could do this with Doctor Who and you could do deals with Disney and all this kind of thing, then it sets potentially a precedent or at least a belief that it could be possible. And that could change the game for regional rivals to things like Netflix. Imagine an iPlayer where you could go and you name a show that's been on the BBC that's homegrown, at least UK grown, not just made overseas and bought and aired here. Stuff like your Dragon's Dens, where you go and everything is there and you can watch them all. You mentioned Coronation Street, soaps, Neighbours, Home and Away, like old soaps where there's loads. I mean,
Amazon is putting Neighbours on. I don't know if it plans to do every single episode, but it certainly did the last two seasons, and now new episodes are airing 3 days a week, I think.
And I noticed that they added two series, or at least two big collections of episodes of Noel Edmonds' classic Deal or No Deal on on Amazon in HD. I love it. I love a bit of Deal or No Deal. It's one of the most brilliant, mindless pieces of utter trash. But it's great background viewing when you're doing something else. And again, imagine those. Or The Weakest Link. This is the one I've been trying to find. I've been building a collection of old Weakest Link episodes.
Why?
You cannot get them. They're available nowhere. Like every now and again, somebody uploads a random old one on YouTube and I've got an alert set up and I can find them, download them and just keep them in an archive. But I'm always permanently hoping that the BBC or equivalent for other shows would just set something up where you can stream this back catalogue. And I would pay good money to access a huge back catalogue of stuff like that. You know, Blind Date from ITV. Cannot get those for level money anywhere. But imagine watching loads of back episodes of 1990s Blind Date. It'd be hilarious.
Blind Date's probably doable. That is an owned property, I think, isn't it? ITV probably has the rights to that. I don't know, Nate, is the answer. I mean, you say let's ignore rights, but you can't. That's the whole point of it. Like, you know, I get that you don't want to invest yourself with that argument, but ultimately, that's what stops it. There's nothing stopping... Well, the BBC's rules actually do prevent it from doing something like this. There are rules in place that say that it has to air things that are on iPlayer. They have sought, I think, and have been given permission to change those rules, which might be why this is now possible, because previously there was a 30-day window. You could, if it was on TV, you could put it on iPlayer and it could stay there for 30 days. It may be that that has now come into effect, and that's part of the reason they're able to do this. And certainly, technically, all of those things I would say exist digitally. I know the BBC did a huge archive project where it went through and digitized all of its library. I mean, that might still be going on, but
yes,
you know,
they started putting those on iPlayer under it's called something like From the Vault or From the Archive. If you go to iPlayer, it's a bit buried, but you go to categories and from the archive. And there are loads of old things in here. Some of them relatively recent, but they do include a lot of very old black and white things, like really old things, like you know, documentaries about how a tube line was made. I remember watching that.
Well, those are great, aren't they?
Yeah, stuff from the 50s. And
looking
60s.
At stuff, and I mean, obviously, that it brings out the most tedious people in the world. Oh, look how things used to be, as dirty children run around war-bombed houses, and you know, it's all great. Apparently, somehow, anyway. Yeah, you know, I mean, it's a part of our heritage, right? Like, it would be a terrible shame, wouldn't it, if we, given that the technology is now absolutely within our reach, if we didn't, you know, make use of some of the fact that we've got this stuff and we could access it. But I don't know. Talk to copyright law. It's an ass. also an ass. The fact that Ireland does extremely badly out of it. I remember seeing some conversations happening on the site formerly known as Twitter, and apparently Ireland, southern, not northern, doesn't have access to iPlayer. It does have access to BBC One, but iPlayer isn't included in that. So where are they going to get their streaming Doctor Who from?
And they're not going to get Disney.
I don't think so, because the deal is UK and Ireland is BBC, everywhere else is Disney. If you're an Irish person, I'm sure this comes up quite a bit in Ireland, I think. It's annoying, and I completely get it. They don't have access to iPlayer. Drop us a note. Let us know.
Yeah, definitely do. And if you've got any other thoughts on stories we've talked about today, also drop us a line. hello@uktechshow.com. That's where you can send all of your things. And if you like things, then prepare for this bit of sound. I'd like to quickly thank some patrons for supporting us in the most direct way possible, i.e. joining our Patreon.
The most direct way possible. They could support us by coming to our houses and holding our hands while we do the show. I mean, that would be very direct support.
Do you want Captain Kremen showing up at your house, holding your hand, caressing you?
Well, I mean, you don't have to make it weird.
Or Charlotte. I'm pretty sure if any of these listeners showed up at your house and held your hand, it would
Charlotte
be weird.
Charlotte says she's in the bushes outside. I wonder what the rustling was. I mean, I think our patrons are great. They absolutely. I mean, you know, the financial helps us keep the show on the air.
Yeah.
You know, but the emotional support they give us actually is second to none as well.
So you can join patreon.com/UK Tech. Whole bunch of stuff there. You get to listen live. You get the back catalogue, unedited shows, extra message, and feel like part of a little group of friends, because that's what you all are. And if you're one of them, prepare for our third story of the week. Well, that's going to do it for this week. We just had a rather fun journey into our monitor setups, past and present, with some rather classic photos of our desks over the years. You can check those out if you are a patron in our Discord or on patreon.com/UK Tech. That's going to do it for now. Ian, do you have any final passing thoughts you would like to give to our dear, dear listeners?
Don't do or say anything near Nate, because he always has a photograph and or video and or audio of it.
Very true.
Is what I've learned during the course of this show.
This is not a surprise to you. I know that for a fact.
No,
you should see some of the other stuff I've got photos of that involve you.
Well, maybe not.
No, or maybe.
I don't take photos because I like to forget.
Goodbye, everyone. Have a fantastic week. Thanks for listening.
See you next one.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.